The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free ARFCOM do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission beginning.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love to stick in battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free ARFCOM starts now.
This is Radio Free ARFCOM. I'll be your host. My name's John Gold. You can call me John or you can call me Jay. It's been a long road to get to this point, but we're finally here. I want to say hi to all the ARFCOMers out there in Radio Land listening to us. Now, before we get started with this first show, I want to give some thanks out to the people that really made it happen. First and foremost, we have to thank Ed Avila, the man behind the machine. We have to thank Goat Boy. He's done a lot of work to get this thing up and running as far as the technical side is concerned. I want to thank all the members of the Avila family. I want to thank our friends here at BBS Radio, giving us a format to get out to the public. I want to thank Old Painless for being one of the first guys to step up and say he'd do a segment for us. I want to thank Yekim AK, he's from Alaska, one of the members, for coining the phrase Radio Free ARFCOM. I want to thank Del Bayeth, he designed from Virginia, he designed the logo for us. Most importantly, I want to thank all you guys out there, the ARFCOM Army, the Hive Mind, all the members and visitors to AR15.com for making this possible. Now, this show is about you guys and for you guys. I'm just here to facilitate the conversations. We're going to have some great guests on today. We've got Ed Avila on. We've got Joe DeBergelis on, the NRA board member. He's an AR-15 moderator as well. In the second hour of the show, Don Shipley, a former U.S. Navy SEAL, is going to be on. He's going to talk about the Navy SEALs being charged with assault in the case in Iraq. With that being said, let's head straight into the ARFCOM news and get the show started.
This is your Radio Free ARFCOM news for January 25th, 2010. Easton, Pennsylvania. Mayor Sal Panto Jr. is trying to bring a vote by the Easton City Council to enact a stolen handgun reporting law. This law would require residents to report a missing handgun within 24 hours of the discovery or face a $1,000 fine and 90 days incarceration. The Easton law would join 21 other Pennsylvania municipalities in adopting some form of lost handgun reporting legislation. The National Rifle Association has appealed the lower court decisions to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, arguing that local municipalities lack the authority to enact gun laws. If you live in Pennsylvania, contact your local city council members and tell them you oppose any gun control legislation that would be enacted by local authorities. Missoula, Montana. Federal authorities want a lawsuit filed by the Montana Shooting Sports Association and Second Amendment Foundation dismissed. The lawsuit was filed to test the Montana Firearms Freedom Act. The feds have filed a motion to dismiss the case, saying the suit has no standing. Montana Shooting Sports Association President Gary Marbit says this, quote, "This means that the game is on now. Now that we have a response from the government, we will be able to respond appropriately and adequately to the motion to dismiss. Then we can get on to arguing the merits and principles of the issue," unquote. Marbit hopes the case makes it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which he admits could take years. Wenatchee, Washington.
Chelan County Sheriff Mike Harum made a public statement saying that Maurice Clemens, the man who gunned down four Lakewood police officers November 29, 2009, was an evil man, and no changes in gun laws are going to prevent murders like he committed. Harum says he has heard rumors that some legislators want to ban assault weapons and others want to require that all guns be registered. He noted that the gun Clemens used in the murder was stolen and that he also stole a gun from a police officer during the shooting rampage. Sheriff Harum said, quote, "Maurice Clemens violated many firearms laws before he murdered the officers, so it seems rather dubious to argue additional laws might have prevented this tragedy," unquote. Las Vegas, Nevada. The annual Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show and Conference, also known as SHOT Show, was held January 19th through the 22nd at the Sands Expo and Convention Center. Complete video coverage of the best products introduced at this year's event can be seen at AR15.com. Also at SHOT Show, 22 executives and employees of firearm manufacturing companies were arrested in Las Vegas after a two-and-a-half-year undercover sting operation aimed at schemes to bribe foreign officials. Some of those arrested have released a statement that can be read at AR15.com. Click the General tab, then click SHOT Show Coverage. The statement is in a thread titled SHOT Show Arrests, Industry Statement. And that is your Radio Free ARFCOM News. We're back live. This is Radio Free ARFCOM. I'm John Gold, the host. We're going to be on here shortly with Ed Avila, the man that made AR-15 possible. He's the godfather of the hive mind. He's the commander-in-chief of the ARFCOM Army. Ed Avila, are you there, Ed?
I'm here today. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been a long time coming for this to get started. Thanks for all your help getting here, getting us to this point. Let me just start off with a couple basic questions for you. How did you come up with the idea for AR15.com?
Well, originally I'd gotten out of the military and was looking for some information on the AR15 platform, and I had a hard time finding it. This is around 1994. So what happened was we started sending some emails back and forth among a small group of individuals, and that eventually turned into a mailing list so that the large group could actually exchange our comments back and forth. Again, this is pretty much at the same time that the internet, the web as we know it, was starting up in around 1994. So really it was an email list that went back and forth, and that grew and grew and grew until eventually it's kind of too much for one day. So we eventually started a website and thought that would be a better mechanism to talk back and forth among all the members.
So was there a point, a year or a time you can look back on and say, you know what, that was the time when AR-15 became AR-15. That's when it became ARFCOM. It's when it became kind of the monster that it is today.
1997 was the year that we registered the AR15.com domain. So technically that's when AR15.com was really born. And in its infancy, you know, it was kind of a sluggish running machine, but as popularity grew, we had to grow with it. And so over time, we upgraded the hardware and we upgraded the connections and have never stopped since.
Okay, so now there, and two brothers, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so you and both your brothers and your father all involved with the website, making it basically a family affair, which is great. That's the model for American success. Let's talk about SHOT Show this year. Let's get right into it. Callers, audience, feel free to call in now with any questions you have for Ed, SHOT Show or AR-15 related, and we'll get to calls here in just a couple of minutes. I'm just going to ask Ed a couple more questions before we hit the callers. Let's talk SHOT Show. What were your impressions this year of SHOT Show?
Well, SHOT Show this year was the first year of a multi-year contract that they signed with the Sands Expo. So it's a new, basically a new location for it. In past years in Vegas, it had been at the Vegas Convention Center. And then last year, while the Sands Expo was being renovated, they moved it to Orlando for one more year. And a lot of people have always talked about the difference between an Orlando trade show versus a Vegas show. And most, I think, agree that a Vegas venue was a much better forum for the SHOT Show. But again, this year being the first year of it in the Sands Expo, I think there were a lot of mixed feelings. I think there was those that thought it was good location, but the majority of the people that I talked to said they were still trying to get used to that new venue. It was, rather than being one large open area, it was more segmented into two levels and then several rooms off of the main areas on both floors. So it was a little bit more hectic and a little more confusing to find everybody that you wanted to see and to really determine where you were and what you had and hadn't seen. But overall, I think the show itself was a great success.
What products specifically caught your eye? Or is there anything special that just jumps out at you right now that you can say, wow, this was really cool. I really thought this was a great idea.
Definitely. I mean, for many years, one of the main attractions to the SHOT Show had been the Magpul and the now Bushmaster and Remington ACR. So certainly that was one of the more popular items that people were taking a look at. Bushmaster themselves had another rifle, an MCR 400, that looks very appealing to me as far as...
Is that a 223?
I have a 338 Lapua semi-automatic. It's available in 5.56, 7.62, and a 338 Lapua.
Oh, wow.
The MCR. That's a new rifle that that's going to be available later here. So certainly as far as being able to reach out and talk with a semi-automatic rifle, that's a great platform, again, based on the AR-15 system that shooters are familiar with.
Did you actually get to handle the ACR?
It's been a year, I think, of a lot of piston rifles. I mean, that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you like it? Was it comfortable?
That's one of the great things of SHOT Show is just being able to put your hands on all these products that have been announced. It certainly is. I mean, again, I'm a big fan of the AR-15 platform. I have been for many years. I think there's a lot of pros to some of these other designs that are coming out there. I will probably never trade my AR-15 platform for another, but I can certainly see the merits and the appeal of some of these other designs that are out there.
You were talking about the new piston guns. Does that seem to be the direction everybody's headed in?
It seems to be that everybody's going to be building a 7.62 AR as well as a piston-based AR. I think that that is a natural evolution of the AR-15 platform and one that has been popular for the last 3 years. This obviously has been the year that has had the most piston entries from the largest number of companies. Everybody from the traditional companies to even Sig Sauer is now coming out with a piston-based AR platform, which I was actually very pleased to see.
Did you get a chance to handle the Ruger, the new Ruger 5.56 offering?
I have. I've had a couple of chances. I handled that rifle at the NRA show in Phoenix earlier this year, and it is a nicely made variant. Again, Ruger being an AR really speaks highly of the AR platform, how traditional companies such as Ruger really see it as where the market has been going, and they needed an entry in that arena. And again, they came up with their own piston-based AR rifle, which has done very well in a lot of the reviews that have been out there.
It looks interesting to me. I haven't had a chance to handle one yet. I think it's time to take some calls. Let me throw the phone numbers out there for our listeners. You can call in on 4 or 5 different numbers we have here. The first one is 415-762-1161. That's 415-762-1161. The next number is 530-413-4511. It's 530-413-4511. You can also get the same, you can get on these lines with the same prefix with 4515 and 4520. So that's 530-413-4511, 4515, or 4520. And you can also get on at 415-287-0074. This is your chance to get in on one on the first radio show ever for AR15.com. Let's go straight to the lines. We have Craig. His screen name is Nightwolf357. He's on line B1. Craig, are you there?
Hey, how you doing, Ed, guys? Ed, I'd like to say first, excellent website, and I'm so glad I found it, and keep up the good work. Hopefully it'll continue to prosper as I try to spread the word about it because it's so good. My question, though, is that somewhere in the forums recently there had been a mention of or a question of lifetime memberships and if the possibility that they might be offered again. What would be the possibility of that?
That's a good question. We have actually debated the time membership back and forth, and we have actually discussed it using a limited set once again for the year. That's something that we have done in the past, particularly during the Obama election when traffic really jumped and we needed a quick way to upgrade basically bandwidth and hardware to support the growth that the site had. So it started off as a purpose action to raise some additional funds, but it's been very popular with our membership, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that we talked about adding another 50 members this year at some point.
If I know when they'd be happening, I'd probably be one of the first to want to sign up for that. I believe in everything that, the site does, helping out in any way possible would be, always a good thing in my opinion.
Well, we appreciate it in the site. We basically put in place the structure for the site, but the site is what it is because of all the members, the dedicated, loyal followers of the site, and something we consider kind of our big, happy family. So that's what we owe the success of the site to.
Yeah, thanks, Ed.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yep. Have a good evening, gentlemen.
You too. Thanks for calling, being the first caller ever to pop the cherry here on Radio Free ARFCOM. We have lines open, callers. Feel free to call in. The phone numbers are 530-413-4511, 4515, or 4520. You can get in right now on any one of those three lines. Also, there is a thread on the GD General Discussion Board. There's a tag up at the top called Radio Free ARFCOM URL. Listen and call-in numbers. All the call-in numbers are posted there. Ed, did you get a chance to look at any of the new generation Glocks there at SHOT Show?
On the one hand, I hate to admit it, but on the other hand, it's a choice. I am not a fan of the Glock platform, so I typically, that's one of the areas that I personally skip only because I am not a Glock shooter. From what I heard.
So that means you're a 1911 guy, right?
That almost means I'm a 1911 guy. I'm not. I'm actually a very dedicated SIG fan. So
Of
my handguns are SIGs, yes.
Okay, but you did handle the Glock, did you? What were your impressions?
No, I did not handle the Glock.
Oh, you did not?
I got any other new products.
I misheard you there. I spoke to you earlier about the night vision. You didn't get a chance to look at night vision this year at all, huh?
That's correct. I didn't have the opportunity. The thing with SHOT Show is it's such a large show that even with the staff that we take, there's no way anyone can see it all. So what we do is we try to split the number of people that we have there to address different segments. A crew there doing video. We had a crew there doing photos. And then we had our business development team going and talking to our partners and our dealers and our sponsors. And then we were talking on strategic levels with some of our other partners out there. So what happens is I don't get to see the show as a consumer per se of the products, and I leave some of the new product announcements and some of the new product videos and photos to the team that's addressing that, just so that we can, in a broad spectrum, cover the entire show with the group that we take there.
Sure. It sounds like you found a way to take all the fun out of SHOT Show, huh? Turn it into a job?
To try to bring it to our users as best way possible.
You guys have done a great job. I want to remind everybody, go under the general section of AR15.com. There's a tab under there for SHOT Show coverage. There's complete video coverage of the SHOT Show there. Let's go straight back to the callers. Rick is online, B1. Are you there, Rick?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. You're on with Ed.
Okay. First of all, very nice to hear you guys on ARFCOM Radio. That's really awesome thing for you guys to do. Really appreciate that.
Thank you.
My question for Ed was, did you find anything at SHOT that you felt was really innovative or unusual that you think might be a real breakout item?
There were a couple of very interesting things. As far as the most divergent from existing products, the most revolutionary has nothing to do with the AR platform, and it's actually the I don't know how to pronounce it, but I call it the Roni from EMA Tactical. It was basically a plastic, call it a carbine structure that you drop your handgun into, and they're making versions for Springfield XDs, for the Glocks, and for the SIGs. And in a very easy way, you can drop your handgun into this thing. In 10 seconds, it turns into a small compact carbine with a collapsible stock, and it can have optical sights. I thought that was the most innovative product there overall, simply because of its difference and divergence from anything else that was out there. If you haven't checked that out, that's from EMA Tactical.
EMA Tactical. I'll have to check that out. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in,
Ray. As far as on the AR-15 platform.
Go ahead, Ed.
John, one of the things I wanted to add is that I think after today, what we're going to do on the site is maybe create a dedicated forum for the radio so we can have different threads as far as discussing the shows that air on a specific date, ideas and concepts of the show.
That sounds like a great idea.
So people can make their suggestions and keep all those segmented in their own threads so that they teach it all.
I think that's a great idea. I've spoken with the Goat Boy a little bit about it, and I think we've got some good ideas coming down the line. Let's see. That was Rick, was it? Let's go Christian from Virginia.
Hey, Ed.
Hey, Christian. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
Well, I just want to thank you and everybody who put this together. And I wanted to thank Mr. Clean and Berserker for sending me some nice firearms. But my question for you is, how do you feel about all of the non-AR-15 related things on the site? Because I know, in general discussion, there's a lot of goofiness going on. Are you more, do you stick to the tech forums, or do you enjoy the goofiness?
I absolutely, I think there's a balance between the two. And because the site is separated into those sections, it makes it easy for somebody that's looking for specific information to be able to get that without a lot of noise. But when you go into a forum that's dedicated to, call it the noise, such as GD, there's a lot of humor and there's a lot of non-gun related valuable information that's in there. So really we try to separate it so that if you're looking for it, you can get to it. But if you want to be entertained, there's a place to do that too, while not mixing the two, so we separate that signal from the noise.
All right. Just one other thing. Can I just say FURROCK?
I was waiting for that to happen.
That's it. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Christian. Let's go next. Marty Pie. He's online B3. Marty, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good
go
to
ahead.
Talk to y'all.
Hey, Mike.
Just got done with the Southeast Texas Zombie Camp Out, FTX. That was pretty neat. There's an after-action report up on it in the survival forum if you want to look at some of the pictures. Me and my wife had a great time while we were down there. Got to meet some really good ARFCOM members that I'd known online, but got to meet them in person in the flesh. And it was a really great time. We had a great turnout, and it was excellent. And we couldn't have come together without your side, Ed. Thank you very much for that.
Well, I appreciate it. One of the benefits of the site, I think, since the beginning has been the get-togethers and meeting the people that, you deal with online all the time. But putting a face to the name, I think I've met a lot of great people that I wouldn't have been able to meet if it wasn't for the site itself. So we're all grateful for that ability.
Yeah, and I am too. I've just expanded my circle of friends just megafold through the site. And it's great to meet people that are like, generally like-minded purpose. So you don't feel like, am I the only one that feels this way on something or thinks this way? So it was great in that respect. To more serious business, do you see the arrests prior to or at the SHOT Show, depending on, what news report you read, do you see that as some type of concentrated attack on guns per se or the gun industry? What's your take on that?
I don't. There's a few people that are blaming that on the Obama administration and the start of a crackdown on the gun industry. But keep in mind that this investigation has been going on for several years. I think they're quoting 2 years that the investigation was being set up. So this started during the Bush administration, and I just see it as an effort to crack down on illegal activities and not necessarily any sort of effort from the new administration to crack down on gun owners or the gun industry itself. Now, one can argue the merits as to the validity of the way things were conducted here, but that's a whole other issue.
Okay, okay. Well, I was just wondering what your perspective is, since you have a closer finger on the pulse of what's going on than probably the average ARFCOMer. So I appreciate your insight on that, and thank you very much again for the opportunity to connect with so many wonderful people. It's just great. I love it.
My pleasure, and thanks for calling and being a part of AR15.com.
Y'all take care.
You too, Marky. Thanks you for too. Calling in. All right, let's go. Next is Bushmaster Noob. He's on line B1. Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Go ahead. Hi, Ed.
I just wanted to thank you guys and you know, the site staff at AR15.com. You guys really make a good resource for gun owners and like-minded people to come to. And I just had a quick question about your opinion about the new Bushmaster ACR and its price point being at, I believe, $3,069, and if you were planning on purchasing one.
I can comment on that. I think everybody had dreams of a $1,500 ACR from 2.5 years ago. Keep in mind that was, if nothing more, an estimate of what this gun was supposed to be. Once it goes through the engineering changes and it goes through the production engineering necessary to be able to manufacture this weapon in reasonable number and with reasonable costs, you end up with a higher number than call it that dream price that everybody had. Now, also keep in mind that this is a new platform with new production parts that need to be sourced. They can't take advantage of the large quantities of parts that are manufactured now for an AR platform. So it's going to cost more to get this thing up and running. Nobody's happy about the price. I'm sure if Bushmaster could, they'd be happy to sell this thing for $1,500 or even less if they could find a way to do it. But in the end, it's a business, and they need to make sure that they recoup their costs. And in my opinion, the market is going to dictate where the price of this thing ends up. Either it's going to end up costing too much to manufacture to be a successful product in the marketplace, in which case it may fade away, or they're going to find a way to reduce manufacturing costs, lower the price, and people are going to be happier with that. I would love to have one. I probably can't afford one at the current price point, but in the future, when it does come down, I look forward to purchasing one myself.
And right, isn't that typical, Ed, for a new product to come out with a slightly higher price point and then to come down over time? Isn't that pretty much how the industry works?
Absolutely. There's a lot of R&D costs that need to be recouped, in addition, as I mentioned, to the startup manufacturing costs that are involved there, as well as the quantity of orders. You know, you can't charge the same when you're making 1,000 parts as you can when you're making 100,000 parts. So it's going to cost more. The SCAR ended up came out more expensive and now recently has been able to drop in money, and whether that's a factor of time, production, or simply the free market dictating where that price ends up, I think the same thing is going to happen with the ACR.
Do you think the ACR has a chance to displace the M16 M4 platform as the U.S. Issue weapon?
Personally, I do not. I think there's a lot of merits to it. I think that the evolution of the AR-15 and the versatility of that platform that has kept it in place this long is what's going to maintain it there. There's never been a more diverse offering for the M4 platform than there is today, and that purely makes it a more versatile and more effective weapon than it ever was. So I think the evolution of the M4 will continue. I see a lot of the modifications that are being made today, including piston uppers, which I think will make their way into the popular or mainstream of the M4. I see that in the near future. I do not see any other platform outright replacing the M4 for general distribution to the military, at least not any time in the near future, and we'll say 10 years for that near future.
Okay. That's fair enough. Let's go back to the phone lines. John, Templar 223, you're on with Ed.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ed. Thank you for a great website. Turning to a little bit lighter subject, I'm curious if Radio Free ARFCOM will be the official alert network when the zombies come out. Any word on that?
I can't speak for that. It sounds like it's the official network for when the galactic invasion begins. Just taking a look at their programming schedule, but we'll see where it goes. I think that the radio show will evolve. Obviously, this being our first show, we have a lot to improve and to make more efficient, but I see it as a supplement to everything else that we have in place. Because it's a radio-free show, keep in mind that if the Internet's down, we have no access to listen to the show itself.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Ed.
Thanks for the call,
Appreciate
John.
It. Thank you.
Vince, you're on with Ed. Are you there, Vince?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Hey, just had a quick question. Chili, beans or no beans?
I'm sorry?
Just wanted to see if that's like chili with beans or no beans.
You're going to have a tough time having him answer that.
No, you definitely need the beans. The beans add the essential protein and fiber. Otherwise, the chili, you know, may taste good, but it doesn't have the nutritional value that it has with the beans.
You're the man, Ed. Thanks very much.
I appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks for calling in, Vince. So you told me you're a SIG guy, Ed. What did SIG have for offering this year that really caught your eye?
Again, SIG had a little bit of an evolution of their 5.56 platform. They had what they're calling, I guess, their sniper rifle, which is a 5.56 DMR, which looks like a very interesting offering. But more importantly, this was SIG's introduction of the AR platform. They released two lines, the 5.16 and the 7.16, which are 5.56 and 7.62 based AR platforms, again, with their own piston system and their own rails, all manufactured in the U.S. by SIG.
That sounds interesting. I haven't had a chance to check out the videos that you guys made from SIG yet, but I'll check those out tonight. Our next caller is Dow on line B1. Dow, are you there?
Doing, man?
Outstanding. You're on with Ed. Go ahead.
Hey, Ed, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Good. I can hear you. How you doing?
I'm great, man. Wow, I can't believe I'm speaking to you. I remember a couple years back, there was a deer hunting thread, and there was a picture of you skinning the deer with one of them little punch daggers. I was wondering if you got anything this year.
Well, there's we'll use this forum to clear up something here. There are actually two Ed Avilas. There's Ed Avila Sr., and there is Edward Avila, which is myself. Ed Avila Sr. is my father.
Okay, yeah, it was actually Ed Sr.
He is the deer hunter and the moderator of Ed Sr.'s Picks. So that is the older version of myself. So
gotcha.
I don't hunt. I didn't take a deer this year, but he is the avid hunter, and he's out the opening day and every chance after that.
Cool. All right, man, I'm happy I had a chance to speak to you guys the first day and all. Be good.
Thanks for calling in, being part of the first show here. We appreciate it. Greg, his screen name is Sawyer800. You're on with Ed.
Hey, Ed, how you doing? I just want to say you got a great website. My uncle, Chucky T, turned me on to the website a couple years ago. He paid for my first team membership, and I've been paying for it on my own here for the past 2 years or so. It's a great website, like I said. Question I had for you was 9mm or 45? What's your preference?
Well, I'm going to receive a lot of flack for this, but I am a 9mm shooter, just like I'm a 5.56 shooter. Same argument can be made for both. Each has its place. I prefer the 9mm and the 5.56 ballistics for general purpose.
All right, good deal. Thanks a lot. And
Thanks for calling in, Greg. All right, we're going to break for a minute for the ARFCOM news, and we'll be back after the break with Ed. And I believe we have a special guest coming on with him, so stay tuned for that.
This is your Radio Free ARFCOM news for January 25th, 2010. Easton, Pennsylvania. Mayor Sal Panto Jr. is trying to bring a vote by the Easton City Council to enact a stolen handgun reporting law. This law would require residents to report a missing handgun within 24 hours of the discovery or face a $1,000 fine and 90 days incarceration. The Easton law would join 21 other Pennsylvania municipalities in adopting some form of lost handgun reporting legislation. The National Rifle Association has appealed the lower court decisions to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, arguing that local municipalities lack the authority to enact gun laws. If you live in Pennsylvania, contact your local city council members and tell them you oppose any gun control legislation that would be enacted by local authorities. Missoula, Montana. Federal authorities want a lawsuit filed by the Montana Shooting Sports Association and Second Amendment Foundation dismissed. The lawsuit was filed to test the Montana Firearms Freedom Act. The feds have filed a motion to dismiss the case, saying the suit has no standing. Montana Shooting Sports Association President Gary Marbit says this, quote, "This means that the game is on now. Now that we have a response from the government, we will be able to respond appropriately and adequately to the motion to dismiss. Then we can get on to arguing the merits and principles of the issue," unquote. Marbit hopes the case makes it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which he admits could take years. Wenatchee, Washington. Chelan County Sheriff Mike Harum made a public statement saying that Maurice Clemens, the man who gunned down four Lakewood police officers November 29, 2009, was an evil man, and no changes in gun laws are going to prevent murders like he committed. Harum says he has heard rumors that some legislators want to ban assault weapons and others want to require that all guns be registered. He noted that the gun Clemens used in the murder was stolen and that he also stole a gun from a police officer during the shooting rampage. Sheriff Harum said, quote, "Maurice Clemens violated many firearms laws before he murdered the officers, so it seems rather dubious to argue additional laws might have prevented this tragedy," unquote. Las Vegas, Nevada. The annual Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show and Conference, also known as SHOT Show, was held January 19th through the 22nd at the Sands Expo and Convention Center. Complete video coverage of the best products introduced at this year's event can be seen at AR15.com. Also at SHOT Show, 22 executives and employees of firearm manufacturing companies were arrested in Las Vegas after a 2.5-year undercover sting operation aimed at schemes to bribe foreign officials. Some of those arrested have released a statement that can be read at AR15.com. Click the General tab, then click SHOT Show Coverage. The statement is in a thread titled SHOT Show Arrests, Industry Statement. And that is your Radio Free ARFCOM news. Okay, and we're back from the news. We have a special guest with us. This is Joe DeBurgles. He's an NRA board member, and he's an avid advocate of AR15.com. Are you there, Joe?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking some time to join us today. Let's get started with a couple of questions for you. How did you get involved with AR15.com originally?
Originally, I was looking for a service or a site to be a source of all things AR15 and its platform. I was referred to the site a few years back, and it just blossomed from there.
And then how did you get involved with the NRA?
Well, I've been a member of the NRA since I was basically old enough to walk. My family's all been life members or members in one way or the other, and we firmly believe and have grown up to basically been a shooting family as well as a very patriotic and historical-based family. So there's no other better organization out there. It's the largest and oldest civil rights organization in the country, and it's just something my family has espoused to me since an early age.
So you've been elected to be an NRA board member. What does that entail, being a board member?
Well, as a board member, we have been elected by over the 4 million members that constitute the NRA to advocate on their behalf how they want the organization to be directed or espouse their views from the grassroots point of view. We're all at large, which means we're all members. They have a nationwide voting base. So we're there to represent the members' views and wants, needs, that type of thing, to the overall good of the organization.
That sounds good. A lot of people don't know exactly what the NRA does for gun owners. What can you say concrete that NRA has done recently to uphold our Second Amendment rights?
Well, the NRA, through its ILA division, if you will, ILA is the Institute for Legislative Action. It's headed up by Chris Cox and his staff, who does an outstanding job in keeping a monitor, a pulse on what's transpiring legislatively. They may impinge upon our Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms. We are basically involved in a wide variety of issues out there. Most likely the most prevalent right now is the pending Supreme Court decision in Illinois versus McDonald. And we've been in front of that. We basically have filed many amicus briefs, myself and Tom King, who's a fellow board member, as well as the other state affiliate NRA associations, and got together, and I think it was 42 of us, we came together, 42 state affiliates, and filed a brief An amicus brief is basically a friend of the court brief stating that we believe, and we believe rightfully so, that the Second Amendment is an individual right to keep and bear arms, not a collective right. It's an individual right. So based upon our victory in Heller, we believe the next logical step is going to be in McDonald, and that's going to codify or incorporate the Second Amendment for all of us. That's just one of the things that the NRA is doing. NRA, ILA is the political arm. NRA as a whole is basically out there to support our shooting disciplines, be it from high power or to Youth 22. We also have a lot of different type of programs that people may be familiar with. The one that I advocate the most is Eddie Eagle Gun Safety Program, which has been taught to, instructed upon over 20 million children out there. And if you don't know about it, John, what it basically institutes to the child is when they come across a firearm, you stop, you don't touch, you leave the area and tell an adult. It's been a fantastic program for us. Marion Hammer is the developer and founder of that program, and it's just been something that's very near and dear to my heart.
That's great. We appreciate your service in the NRA. I hear you made it to SHOT Show. You came back a little bit under the weather.
I did. Unfortunately, I caught a bit of the bug in the plane on the way back. Kind of a funny story there, but if Edward's still around, I'm sure he can tell you for it. But we had an individual.
I told you to stay out of those strip clubs.
Well, I wasn't there. I was actually too busy going across the monstrosity of the SHOT Show. But we had a great time when we were down there.
Go ahead and talk about SHOT Show. What were your impressions this year with the new venue and some of the new products available?
Well, I tell you, the SHOT Show, I've been there several times before. This is the first time at the Sands Convention Center. It was enormous. It's the largest show that they had thus far. And as such, they kind of they took over the entire complex, but unfortunately it didn't lend itself to a fluid or a flowing type of venue. The first day was just walking around the main floor, and the next couple of days was to kind of venture out. They took up so much space, John, that they were actually using the former parking lot or parking ramp structure underneath the building. And there were a lot of vendors down there that voiced their displeasure being stuck down there in the labyrinth or the catacomb. But we try to make it to as many booths as possible. Overall, I would say it was a great success for NSSF and all their supporting sponsors.
What products caught your eye this year?
Oh, I tell you, it was a kid in the candy store. There's a wide variety of things that are out there, from LaRue's products to the new products being sponsored by Smith & Wesson, to our good friends at Magpul, Trijicon. Bushmaster had a very nice display out. I tried to hit every single one out there. Unfortunately, because of a variety of obligations and different sort of things, I scanned and tried to hit as many, but I don't think I made a big dent in it.
Did you get to see any of the night vision displays at all?
I did. I was over at Tactical Night Vision Company, and they got some very good things that I was interested in. The one that grabbed my eye the most was their nice night vision monocular, which I think it's a very nicely done, compact, and did a great job. What I saw, the demonstration I saw when I was able to view my own, it's going to be a wonderful one.
Okay. Ed, are you still there? It looks like we dropped you for a minute.
I'm here. I was doing an AT&T commercial, and they decided to drop me, so here I am once again.
Okay. let's hit the phone lines and get some calls for the two of you. Bill's DK, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead. You've been on hold for a minute. Thanks for being patient. You're on with Ed and Joe.
Cool. I just wanted to say in on one. So, also, what did you guys think of the Kel-Tec version of the 5.7 and 22 Magnum, the PMR-30?
I didn't personally take a look at it, so, Joe, if you have a comment on it, go ahead.
Thanks, Ed. I went to Kel-Tec. I personally enjoy their products. I didn't see the 22. Just by what I know of the products, I'm sure it's going to be a winner for them. But it was one of those things where I looked, I talked to the rep very quickly, and moved on. So I don't want to give you any – I didn't have any hands-on impression of it.
Right, yeah, it looks kind of interesting. First, kind of semi-auto and 22 Magnum. And it looks a lot like the 5.7, I thought. So, all righty, thanks, guys.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Let's go to Evil Black Weapons from Florida. He's on line B1. Are you there, Evil Black?
Yes, I am. I am. This is incredible. I think I found something new that I can be addicted to. I wondered if there's anywhere of Colt coming out with a piston version of the 6940.
I have heard through unofficial channels that Colt is going to be coming out with the entirely new division, Colt Tactical, that is going to be based on a number of new products, none of which have been decided yet, but the piston version is one of the products that I have heard being discussed for that platform.
Wow. Okay. Also, I wanted to know, did Glock unveil anything at SHOT that was kind of different than what they already got going?
Joe, you want that?
I'm sorry. Did you say Glock?
Yes.
Glock? They unveiled the Generation 4. I heard earlier that Ed's not a fan of the Glock platform. I am. The people at Glock came out with Generation 4. Their platforms, I happen to like them. I've been shooting them. I carry them for my profession. I firmly believe in what they do. It's one of those point-and-shoot type of platforms where if you know how to shoot and you know what you're doing, it's able. The Generation 4s are basically an improvement upon what they've had in the past. But they've got a whole bunch of prototypes that they're working on as well, which I can't unfortunately disclose. But they're constantly trying to be one or two steps ahead.
Now that you've said it, I don't know how to shoot, Joe. I appreciate that.
No, one of the best partners I ever had in the training program was Ed. And he's basically the only person I would go out there in a formation type of setting and go through the evolutions. Ed's one heck of a shooter, even though he's got to use a SIG.
Yeah. All right. Well, gentlemen, that was it. And I appreciate it. And I've got a feeling I'm going to be listening for a while. All right.
We
thank
appreciate
you.
It. Thanks for calling, Eagle Black. We appreciate it. I got a question for either one of you, whoever wants to take it. The Judge platform with the 410 45 long, it's starting to take off. It looks like there's a couple more manufacturers coming out with similar weapons. What are your guys' opinions on that platform?
Well, from the civilian standpoint, I will say that I think they do a lot of very good PR. I think some of their commercials are very appealing as far as making it look very appealing. I personally am not a fan. But, Joe, you may have your opinion from a different perspective.
No, I agree with you. Their PR and their commercials are very eye-catching. I don't really know how a smaller hand or a miniature gun, if you want to call it that, in the 410 round. I never shot one myself. I've shot smaller guns that carry the 357 cartridge, and it's a handful. So I don't know how that would be. If somebody practices with it, and that's the biggest thing. If somebody is accustomed to using that in times of stress or strain or surprise, it's obviously a very valuable type of weapon to have or a firearm to have. But I'm more of a smaller, like a 380, if you're going to carry something smaller, kind of something a little bit more you can control in times of strain or stress.
I think we need an AR-15.com Judge skeet shooting competition.
That would be
awesome.
Oh,
that'd be great.
That would be a lot of fun. I wonder what the range is on those. I wonder if you could even hit a clay pigeon out very far with one of those things.
Well, that's part of the challenge. You got to get close.
You've got to stand right up on top of it, basically. I know the website's AR15.com. You also do it with every weapons platform. What were the AK-47 products that were being unveiled at this year's SHOT Show that you noticed?
Joe, you want to take that?
Well, I'm a fan of the AK. I've saw a lot of, there's not too many really new things that you can put on the AK platform. It's kind of, is what it is. When Kalashnikov designed it, he designed it for a certain way, what have you. You know, there's a variety of different types of magazines out there available, but I didn't see anything that was new and exciting other than the weapon like mounting and that kind of thing, but it's pretty much a run as you go platform. There wasn't really that many that I saw anyways advertising various things for the AK.
Okay, let's talk suppressors for a minute. There's been quite a bit of advances made in suppressors over the last few years. They've become a lot smaller and a lot more effective. Was there anything that caught your eye? We'll go with you, Ed, right now. I guess we're getting ready to drop you to bring on our callers for the two-way range segment. But was there anything that you caught your eye as far as suppressors were concerned?
I spent some time in the Gemtech booth. I think that was probably the main suppressor booth that I visited. Again, as you mentioned, it's iterations and advancements of the technology they currently have as far as improving accuracy, efficiency, and shootability of their platforms. But nothing revolutionary. There's some very cool 50 caliber suppressors out there for those that have that need. I think those would be a great asset to have, but nothing revolutionary that I saw.
Hey, Ed, I want to thank you for your time here today. I want to thank you for the website and for all the help you've done getting this radio show put together. We're going to let go so we can free up a line to get our two contestants for the two-way range on. Once again, just want to say thank you.
All right, John, I appreciate everything you've done putting this show together, and I'll be listening to see who wins this debate. Thank you.
It should be interesting. Thanks, Ed. Joe, let's keep you on. The NRA had a pretty big presence this year at SHOT Show. What were the main things that the NRA was trying to get across to the public this year?
Well, basically, the NRA is at SHOT and all the rest of the big show of the country. At the same time we had a presence at SHOT, we had one at SCI in their conference up at in Reno, Nevada. As always, we're there to expound upon our fight for freedoms, for our support of all shooting sports. If you notice that we've done everything from, like I said, the 22 platform all the way up to AR-15, we have taken a noticeable stance on supporting the Black Rifle platform. If you notice, all our magazines now, you can't go past one or two pages without seeing an AR in some configuration, be it in camel, black, or whatever colors are coming out. So we're there to espouse what's going on, what's available, and how we can help those, by conservative estimates, 80 million firearms-owning citizens out there. And hopefully more and more will come through the NRA because of strength in numbers.
What's the NRA's view on something like the Montana Firearms Freedom Act and the different acts that have been passed in several states? Is this something the NRA is avidly working behind to help, or is it something they look at as kind of one of those laws that it's just kind of going to be on the books but not really be enforced?
Well, I can't make comment on that because whatever I would say will be basically taken as what the NRA's view is. The NRA ILA is the one who makes comments on all type of pending legislation. So I can't really speak on that behalf. I can tell you that every single piece of legislation through all the 50 states is looked at, monitored, and basically we have a strategy that goes behind each one. We have liaisons in each state, which monitors statewide issues. Anything federal, we have a federal side. And so all these types of things that come up and perk up to the top, believe me, we have our finger on the pulse.
Okay. You spoke a little bit more about how the NRA is making more of an approach towards black rifle owners, and that where in the past they've been more of a hunting type thing. Is this something that is this year they've or 2009 last year they consciously made an effort? Look, you know, there's a whole segment of the gun owning population that we're kind of leaving behind, or what was the impetus behind that?
No, I don't really feel that. I've been very fortunate to shoot everything basically out there. When I ran for the board, my motto was from black powder to black rifles. And I've shot everything. And I think the NRA represents all the shooting implements that are out there. I don't think we never de-emphasize AR-15s. I don't think we ever said we consciously going to make a decision not to include them. I don't believe we're exclusively a hunting organization, which a lot of people out there want to say, although I am a hunter. But I think what happens is there's various factions out there that want to drive wedges in between of all our advocacy to say, well, we're a hunting organization, or we're a black rifle organization, or we're a competition organization. We're not. We represent everyone under a big umbrella. So the emphasis has been to look around and see what we can do, not only for the AR platform, but to enhance all the rest of the disciplines that are out there. And my involvement in the last couple of years, from be it election volunteer coordinator up to a committee member, now on the board. I've never seen the NRA come out and say, no, we're not going to advocate for this, or we're not going to do it for that. It's collectively every firearm out there. So it's something when I hear people say we just took off the banner last couple of years, oh, no, we were shooting those platforms at Camp Perry for a long time. Now, with the advent of the three-gun matches and the bench shooting type of things, they become more and more popular. So we've obviously stepped up our efforts to make sure that we address those new forms of shooting to include the NRA stature and presence.
I'm glad you addressed that. It's something that a lot of people talk about. You hear a lot of chatter on the Internet about it. Let's take one more caller if you have time, Joe.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Phil from Florida, you're online.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Phil.
It's actually Bill, but it sounds like Phil, I guess. But
it's Bill?
Got to know the jokes about the chili and and the 9mm and things. So I wanted to ask a serious question. Can I expect this show to be on online every Monday at this time, or is it going to be more than one day a week?
The idea is to have this show every Monday at this time, and then we'll make a podcast available for download for the people that miss the show.
All right, good enough. Keep up the good work. We it's time well wasted, you know what I'm saying?
Thanks for calling in, Bill. All right, Joe, thanks for coming. I'm going to let you go, but I wanted to let everyone know we're going to try to get Joe DeBurglis on every week for a short period of time to give us an NRA corner and kind of give you guys an option, an opportunity to talk to an NRA representative and a board member. And we'll get to work on that, Joe.
That would be great. And if anybody's out there listening, my handle on the site is Direct Action. So please feel free to IM me or shoot me an email off of the site. I'm there quite regularly. And John, all the best for you and your inaugural broadcast here. We're here to help, and you have a great night.
Thanks for joining us. Okay, now it's the time we've all been waiting for. It's time for the two-way range.
Lock and load. It's time for the two-way range.
Okay, we're on here for the two-way range. Today's contestants are Bradley C. Are you there, Bradley?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Spartan Hart, you're our other contestant. Are you here?
Yes.
Okay, today's contestants are going to be competing for the winner will get a one-year free renewed membership at the current level they are at once their current membership expires. The runner-up is playing for either a Boltface logo official hat or T-shirt. So, the topic for today is Bradley C's infamous internet stalking post, where he saw the woman at Walmart and found out who she was from the internet and sent her a letter. Now, the question for today is that creepy and weird and stalkerish, or is that just normal with today's technologically advanced society? I'm going to give Bradley C. the first 90 seconds to defend his position. Go, Bradley.
Okay, thank you very much, and also thanks to all of our ComEd senior and his crew. But to get into the topic, I think it's fine. The young lady in question is under the age of 25. It's technologically acceptable to use internet to communicate either for your first meet or last meet, unfortunately, in some cases, and everything in between. I think I did the right thing because it paid off. She said that the letter was well thought out and very sweet. I think I judged her personality from meeting and, I guess, gawking at her a couple times. But, yeah, it's different now. You couldn't have done this 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. It would have been really creepy. But young people today, for example, don't own CDs largely. Can you imagine that? You know, they rely on the computer for all their music and such. But, no, I don't think it's creepy, stalkerish at all. Anything you post on the Internet is public forum, just like on ARFCOM. If you post your photo, you're liable to get Photoshopped. You know, if you have a social networking page, you're likely to get contacted by people who like you. And if you don't like that, then you can choose not to participate. All in all, it paid off, and I'm having long conversations with the young lady now, so I think I did great.
Okay, now before we go to Spartan Hart, I want all our listeners to know you can call in and ask either of these to any question or make any comment you want here. The numbers are 415-762-1161, 530-413-4511, 4515, or 4520. or 415-287-0074. Call in if you have a question for Bradley or Spartanhart. Spartanhart, it's your turn. Make your case.
I would argue that it's a bad idea for men to do it. Women might get away with it, but I would say women can do it because women like to know who they are dealing with. And an email or text message just isn't very personal enough. I think it would give them the impression that you lack the confidence to actually talk to them in person. And in all the threads I started about women, the consensus was appearing to lack confidence was fatal. Plus, talking in person versus online can get your point across so much better. I mean, just the tone of your voice tells them your mood, your confidence. The way you dress shows if you're a sloppy person or if you're a sharp little dresser who they can take home and show to mom and dad or something like that. And all of this isn't counting your simple physical attraction. I mean, they don't want to read your email and picture a pinnacle of manhood like me and then see you in person with larger breasts than they have. And not to mention that some states have laws about cyber-stalking people. I mean, California and Florida are two that immediately spring to mind. But then there are other states that are, you know, considering such laws. I want to say Atlanta and Florida, but I'm not sure. And then according to the Internet, they define cyberstalking as the use of the Internet or other electronic means to stalk someone. So that was what all I was going to say.
Okay, Bradley, what do you have to say to that?
Well, first of all, my breasts are definitely not larger than hers. Hers are larger by a considerable margin. I speak to her today through text only. We don't pick up the phone and call each other. We either talk online or on the phone via text. And emails. That's just the way some people communicate now. I would venture to say that this is not an instance of cyber stalking, because had she ever asked me to stop talking to her, or if she replied to my email and said, oh no, you're creepy, never talk to me again, I wouldn't have. You know, I wouldn't have made any further effort to contact her. Probably would have tried to avoid her in person, you know. You know, it is kind of a large town here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes
Spartan, you're up.
Go ahead. I'm out. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I wasn't accusing you of cyberstalking. I was just saying that's something that might be out there to look at.
One point I want to make here, Bradley, is isn't it fair to say that you didn't actually make contact with this girl online? You actually ended up, she never saw your letter until after she knew who you were. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I guess she never read it, and then I finally went up to where she works and talked to her, got her number, you know, met her in person, basically got comfortable or made her comfortable with me enough to spring this whole letter thing on her, because I guess I let Ofcom convince me that I'm some kind of weirdo, although I'm not. And then when she finally read the letter, she said it was sweet, well thought out, that she would have responded positively.
What does her boyfriend have to say about all this?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it. I don't think she has either.
I wonder what his username is.
That's another two-way range session.
All right, let's take a question from a caller, Merrill. You're on line B3. You're on with the two-way range.
Yeah, I was just wondering if before you conjured up this newfangled means of contacting this woman, if you look back to some of the older folks, well, site staff, for example, when they had a hankering for a young lady, they'd use smoke signals. And I was just wondering if you ever asked some of the old folks for some advice and guidance.
No. Older guys I go to advice for serious matters and for things that that I think they would know about. How to contact and break the ice and start a friendship with a young lady under the age of 25. I don't think that's something that they're very well in touch with.
Well, if the old guys didn't know how to break the ice, there wouldn't be any young guys. Or girls.
Well, yeah, but the woman back then is a different animal from the woman now. A lot of paradigms have changed, both in the way we communicate, as well as the way
uh-huh.
we meet and the way we interact as a whole.
Well,
Merrill,
good luck to you.
I thought site staff didn't use any communication back in the day. They just hit them on the head with a stick and drug them back in the cave.
Now, let's not blaspheme the ancient ones. We must respect our elders.
Merrill, thanks for your call. Let's take another caller, Big Easy Snow. What do you have to say?
Oh, I just wanted to bring up to Bradley C. about her texting him. Well, of course she's only texting. She has a boyfriend. If she were to speak out loud, he'd get suspicious, and then it would all be over.
What do you think about that, Bradley? You think that's why she's texting you, because she's scared to talk with you because her boyfriend might overhear?
Well, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that before, but that's probably absolutely true. She also told me that she texts mostly with her other friends that she talks to. She spends hardly any time speaking on the phone. But yeah, that's a good point. And Biggie, as you know, thanks for your kind comments in the thread.
No problem. But then again, if she tells you that she's texting other people too, I mean, can you believe a word she says? She's two-timing her boyfriend.
Not people that she's romantically interested in, just friends from school, her girlfriends, basically everybody else that she knows.
I don't know. I'd take anything she tells you with a grain of salt.
Well, yeah, but that's, I'd take anything a woman says with a grain of salt.
Good point.
Fair enough. Thanks for the call, Big Easy Snow. It's good to hear from you. Let's see. Do we have one more caller who we'll take before we end this? Dimples412, you're online.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good. Go ahead and speak your piece to these young guys.
Okay. It is the age of Internet, so I can understand it's a lot easier to talk to somebody through a letter, through a text, through an email, than it is to get the nerve to actually speak to somebody. Kind of sometimes guys got to build that up. So I don't really see a problem with it.
Bradley, anything to say to that? Spartan?
Yeah, I agree with the caller 100%. If I had found the young lady's address and, put an unstamped envelope with a letter in her mailbox, yeah, that would be pretty creepy. Or if I put it under her windshield wiper. But I think the medium I used was totally acceptable.
Okay, Spartan Heart, I'm going to give you the last word. What do you have to say?
Oh, not much. I'm just surprised Big Easy Snow didn't have anything to say to me. Oh, I'm just teasing it. Oh, by the way, thanks for the BOTG photos.
Was that to Big Easy Snow?
Yeah.
I haven't seen those yet. I'm going to have to look those up here. All right, that was today's two-way range. Maybe it wasn't as perfect as it could have been. There should be a poll up online for all our listeners. Go to AR15.com, go to the GD section. There should be a poll tacked up there online shortly from one of the moderators. You can decide who you feel won first place in today's debate. Spartan Heart, thank you. Bradley C., thanks for manning up and coming to defend your position. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thanks a lot.
Like I said, if you want to debate Walmart's receipt-checking policy, I'm up for grabs.
All right, we might do that in the future. Okay, we're going to take a short break for the news. We have Old Painless's Box of Truth this week. He's going to tell everybody how he got involved in shooting. After that, we'll come back with Don Shipley, former U.S. Navy SEAL, here on Radio Free ARFCOM.
This is your Radio Free ARFCOM news for January 25th, 2010. Easton, Pennsylvania. Mayor Sal Panto Jr. is trying to bring a vote by the Easton City Council to enact a stolen handgun reporting law. This law would require residents to report a missing handgun within 24 hours of the discovery or face a $1,000 fine and 90 days incarceration. The Easton law would join 21 other Pennsylvania municipalities in adopting some form of lost handgun reporting legislation. The National Rifle Association has appealed the lower court decisions to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, arguing that local municipalities lack the authority to enact gun laws. If you live in Pennsylvania, contact your local city council members and tell them you oppose any gun control legislation that would be enacted by local authorities. Missoula, Montana. Federal authorities want a lawsuit filed by the Montana Shooting Sports Association and Second Amendment Foundation dismissed. The lawsuit was filed to test the Montana Firearms Freedom Act. The feds have filed a motion to dismiss the case, saying the suit has no standing. Montana Shooting Sports Association President Gary Marbit says this, quote, "This means that the game is on now. Now that we have a response from the government, we will be able to respond appropriately and adequately to the motion to dismiss. Then we can get on to arguing the merits and principles of the issue," unquote. Marbit hopes the case makes it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which he admits could take years. Wenatchee, Washington. Chelan County Sheriff Mike Harum made a public statement saying that Maurice Clemens, the man who gunned down four Lakewood police officers November 29, 2009, was an evil man, and no changes in gun laws are going to prevent murders like he committed. Harum says he has heard rumors that some legislators want to ban assault weapons and others want to require that all guns be registered. He noted that the gun Clemens used in the murder was stolen and that he also stole a gun from a police officer during the shooting rampage. Sheriff Harum said, quote, "Maurice Clemens violated many firearms laws before he murdered the officers, so it seems rather dubious to argue additional laws might have prevented this tragedy," unquote. Las Vegas, Nevada.
The annual Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show and Conference, also known as SHOT Show, was held January 19th through the 22nd at the Sands Expo and Convention Center. Complete video coverage of the best products introduced at this year's event can be seen at AR15.com. Also at SHOT Show, 22 executives and employees of firearm manufacturing companies were arrested in Las Vegas after a 2.5-year undercover sting operation aimed at schemes to bribe foreign officials. Some of those arrested have released a statement that can be read at AR15.com. Click the General tab, then click SHOT Show Coverage. The statement is in a thread titled SHOT Show Arrests, Industry Statement. And that is your Radio Free ARFCOM News.
Hello everyone, this is Old Painless from the Box of Truth. It's a great pleasure to participate in AR15.com radio. I thought we might talk about shooting stuff today and about learning about firearms and ballistics. As a young boy, my dad gave me a .22 rifle, a .22 pistol, and a .410 shotgun. And I would go to my grandparents' place in Eagan, Louisiana, and spend days and weeks walking in the woods and shooting stuff and just having a great time. My grandfather had a sand pit on his property, and it had vertical walls about 15 feet high. This gave me a chance to shoot into the walls and see how they worked. I would shoot both the rifles and the pistol into the wall and recover the bullets to see if they penetrated more or less. Also shot regular .22s and hollow points and collected all the spent bullets. I also had my mom save me Sears catalogs, and I shot these too to recover the bullets. I had a pretty good collection of all these bullets. I was really interested in the terminal ballistics. My dad encouraged this as he thought this was interesting also. Eventually I kind of graduated to center fire ammunition and also spent quite a bit of time shooting and hunting. I also shot my .410 shotgun into the walls of the sand pit, and I noticed it didn't make much of a dent when I was shooting birdshot. I experimented with buckshot and slugs and finally learned there was a great deal of difference in birdshot and buckshot. I also spent some time digging bullets out of the local police range berms and have a collection of old bullets I got out of there. Anytime I had a chance to shoot a new firearm, I would use the opportunity to try to recover the bullet in the study. One of the things I quickly learned was that rifles were much more powerful than normal pistol rounds. Rifles are rifles and pistols are pistols. As I was posting on AR15.com, I noticed a lot of people said things like, I believe, I think, I bet, or I imagine this round would penetrate this much in this medium. I knew there was only one way to know for sure, and that is to actually do the shooting and look and see what happens. I set up the Box of Truth, which is a box I could put sheetrock and wood boards in and then shoot them and test for the penetration. I took pictures and posted about it on AR15.com, and eventually I set up my own site where I post these experiments. I still post on AR15 first and then move it to my site at a later time. For now, we have about 48 posts on my site that deal with shooting experiments. I also have 96 posts about firearms and CNR weapons and other educational posts about refinishing firearms and that sort of thing. It's a great hobby. I really enjoy it. Why? Well, because it's fun to shoot stuff.
Okay, we're back. This is Radio Free ARFCOM. I'm on the line now with Don Shipley. He's a former U.S. Navy SEAL and owner of the Extreme SEAL Experience. Don, how are you today?
I'm fine. I appreciate you having me on here. I'm recording The Bachelor, so I'm all yours, man.
Okay, let's go then. Let me just ask you a few questions about your time in the Navy. When did you join the Navy, and how did you get involved in the SEALs?
Well, you know, I tell you, as strange as it sounds, probably the best decision I ever made was to drop out of school and join the Navy. I did that at 17. I knew I wasn't going anywhere. I was a farm boy in Pennsylvania, and just a big world out there, and wasn't doing very well in school, and needed to spread my wings, and so my parents reluctantly did that, and I joined in 1978. boot camp in Great Lakes, and never looked back. So, got my education, and you know, the rest is history, man.
Okay. When did you know you wanted to be a SEAL? Did you join the Navy to become a SEAL, or is it something you found out about after you were already enlisted?
No, it's, you know, back then, in 78, there was no talk, there was no books, there were no movies. You know, we didn't have computers or anything like that. And, I do remember them, you know, guys that, still go to boot camp, their second day of boot camp. Some big burly SEAL walks through the door and tells them all about the SEAL program and divers and EOD and things like that and asks who wants to try out. But I remember it, and, me, I wanted to go overseas. That's all I wanted to do. It took me a couple of years. I did a few years in Japan on a destroyer and saw the world, got it all out of my system, and went to my second ship in the Navy in California and met my wife on there. She was a young sailor as well, and got married on that ship, and I transferred to Coronado, California to an assault craft unit and saw the guys going through Bud's training. And thought, hell, I'll give that a try.
Now, I hear your son was the youngest Navy SEAL ever to graduate Buds. Is that true?
Well, we're talking weeks or months here. You know, it's 17, you're it. You know, I think one of the guys that we're probably going to talk about here, one of the contractors killed over there, Helgeson, did it at 17 as well. I certainly could not have done it. At 17.
When I was 17, I could barely find my asshole from my elbows, so there's no way I could have done it. I have a lot of respect for all of our armed service members, but I really have a lot of respect for those guys who can make it through that Bud school. That's a tough school.
Well, it's tough for these young guys, especially. You know, a little bit more maturity when you go in. You know, I certainly had it. Some of the guys joining right out of boot camp, that is a very tough thing to be thrust into, you know, what's considered to be the toughest military training in the world, you know, pulled right away from mom and you go into it. But, yeah, it's tough for everybody, but especially the younger guys.
Okay, I want to say to our listeners, this is your chance if you've ever wanted to ask a Navy SEAL a question to get online right now. The number's 415-762-1161. 415-287-0074 or 530-413-4551, 4515, or 4520, your chance to get on with Don Shipley, a Navy SEAL. Don, let's talk about the Extreme SEAL Experience, the business you run. What exactly is that all about?
In 1992, when I was a active duty SEAL, I retired in 2003, but I was asked to run the first Navy SEAL Sea Cadet program. These were Boy Scouts in the Navy. You know, all the branches have them. The Marine Corps does, the Army. Young guys for recruiting thing come to the Marine Corps or the Navy for a couple of weeks in the summer. And I put together one, you know, younger guys. And the program had a lot of success. The guys did better in Buds after attending it. And, well, I really loved doing it, loved working with the young guys, and did it six different times over the years. But it's kind of what we started down here. A lot of it was done here on our property and local area. And so, you know, when I took it kind of civilian, you know, certainly the older guys come now. It's not just for the young guys. A lot of older guys and cops and firefighters and different people come just to get a taste for SEAL training. So we have a good time with them down here.
Okay, now where is that located again?
We're in Chesapeake, Virginia. So guys that get through Buds training in the Navy are going to be stationed in San Diego, and the West Coast SEAL teams are right here in Norfolk, Virginia, at the East Coast ones. So it's a SEAL-a-palooza down here. We've got plenty of good frogmen to help out and run these guys through.
And I understand all or most of your employees are Navy SEALs or ex-Navy SEALs?
That's one of the requirements. It's all SEALs all the time, except for, you know, it's a small family business. It's myself and my wife, you know, the guys come down here, face a name and not a number, you know, not mass production, but get some good, you know, active duty retired SEALs to lend a hand down here and, you know, talk to these guys, explain what goes on. You know, knowledge is power out at Buds, and there's so much crap on the internet. You know, guys don't know which way to spend. There's so many books, movies, documentaries. It's very confusing to these guys. And, you know, it's pretty simple. You got to put your nose to the grindstone and get in there. So, too many weird things they do, too many weird training things, too many weird diets. crazy stuff. Here we just give them the sanity check, and it's all guys who have done what they want to do. We've all got through Hell Week. We've all made it through BUDS, and plenty of knowledge there, tips.
So what can the average guy expect if he were to come to the Extreme SEAL experience? What would his experience entail? What would go into it?
Well, we don't run a push-up school down here. You know, the training is tough. The guys are going to certainly experience a lot of exhaustion, a lot of sleep, lack of sleep. Very tough course. So it's, no SEAL forgets his first night ocean swim. And we put these guys out here in the water at night, and it's a wake-up call. Their first night patrol is always a strange thing that goes on. Quite shocks me every time we do it, but we take them on a very simple, a few thousand meter night patrol. And the comments when they come in off of that, it's wow, like nothing I ever thought, saw in the movies. You know, I never knew you guys did that stuff. Just very tough, very challenging, a lot of shooting, a lot of helicopters, a lot of water work, but just training, showing them what it's like out there and answering those questions for them.
Now, do you guys do any force-on-force training there?
We have a really good group of bad guys. These guys fully kit out and dressed to the current themes of the wars overseas, complete with a lot of special effects, and it really gets them pumped up when they go in, so we train them for these. We use some, we shoot a lot of live ammo down here, a lot of combat courses and pistol courses. But they use some very powerful airsoft weapons and get in there and, do some assaults, do some recons, plan these things. And we just kind of guide them. You have a lot of leeway as a SEAL to, look for weaknesses and targets. And that's what we teach them here. And these guys, with very little experience, are very hard to go up against. They're watching for a weakness, and they'll fully exploit it. So the bad guys that we employ here have a really tough time trying to keep these guys at bay. They do a good job.
I wanted to ask you, Jesse Ventura. There's been a lot of talk about whether he's really a Navy SEAL or whether he was just part of the UDT teams, and whether that's a different family or whether you guys consider yourselves all one family. Is there a consensus as far as he's concerned in the SEAL community?
No, Jesse, did you finish?
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He's a SEAL. He went through the same training. It's no different. And in 1983, we decommissioned the last UDT team. Underwater demolition, and we all became SEALs. But back when Jesse went through, guys were assigned to either an underwater demolition team after training, or they were assigned to a SEAL team. Don't know if you know it or not, but Jesse's brother was a SEAL before he was. So,
I did not know that.
Oh, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between them, especially talking to him on the phone, but. Jesse, his real name is Jim Janos, and he got interested in the Navy from his brother. They got him in, and he made it through BUDS, and those two were stationed together.
All right, let's talk about the situation with his current Navy SEALs being charged with abuse of Ahmed Hashim Abed. Now, for the listeners that don't know, this Abed guy, he's the one that was the mastermind behind the ambush of some American contractors, the ones that, whose bodies were hung from bridges and defaced and all manner of just atrocious, just heathenistic type stuff done to them. Why don't you go over the situation there so the listeners understand what's going on there?
Well, that term mastermind gets used a lot. He's a clown. What a dude. I don't know. He laid in wait with a bunch of his buddies and just picked a vulnerable target. The guys were out running the catering service, convoying a catering service, and they were attacked. They were ambushed, and it wasn't enough to just kill them, just to mutilate them and do what they did. And it really stirred up a hornet's nest over there. And he was wanted, and that clown hid in one of the worst areas of town, and just surrounded himself by a bunch of other clowns, savages, and boy, they hunted him, and everybody, a lot of different government agencies, a lot of different forces hunted and hunted and hunted that guy, and a SEAL team found him, went in one night, and captured him. But, really crazy story of what they did. Those guys are very lucky to have gotten out of there alive. That was an extremely bad environment, and they did it without firing a shot and just snatched him right out of his bed and hauled his ass to the rear. So very, very complex, brazen, bravado, and just everything you want to think about, you know, our special forces doing. You know, these guys did top notch.
As I understand it, he actually had a pistol under his pillow that he didn't even have time to pull out and use. That's how good the operation went.
Yeah, well, you know, when you wake up, there's a couple of names that, you know, through, that they've given, SEALs over there, the enemy, you know, hell, in Vietnam, they were the men with green faces, and, they're currently called by, you know, the bad guys over there, the men with green eyes. You wake up and, you see that. There's, you know, it's speed surprise, to get in there. It, you really don't want to put up a fight, so not a lot of them do. They will go willingly, and if the guys get that element of surprise on them, it's terrifying, just absolutely terrifying for them. And but if they don't get that element of surprise, you know, all hell breaks loose in there because they will fight. But they snatched him on out of there, meant business, and these guys are trained to do that. You know, get him out with the least resistance. You know. They did an exceptional job. Really,
so,
really good.
So they pull him out. They get exfiltrated back to their camp. And then at the camp, what happened there?
There's a couple of, I don't want to go too much into it. You know, it's still ongoing, but I will tell you this. At some point, and my personal belief is, because you know, I've experienced this a little bit. It doesn't happen very often, but I'd call it the lifeguard syndrome. There is a, you know, when you give a kid his first job as a lifeguard, you put a whistle in his mouth and you tell him he's in charge of that pole, he will just blow that whistle insanely, penalizing kids, get out of the pole, 10-minute break, you know. And there's a very small group of guys that resent SEALs, resent special forces. They're never going to do that. The guys have beards. Their uniforms are filthy from work. They've got very cool weapons and all kinds of lasers. And, you know, these guys are in kind of thankless positions over there. And, I don't know, little man complex or whatever. I think there was a big air of dissent between this guy who made that accusation, and I'm sure he regrets it now. He never knew how big it was going to get, but basically he said he had saw them assault this guy a bit.
So let's just get this straight. The prisoner himself, Abed, he never made an accusation of assault. The accusation of assault was made by a U.S. Navy officer, petty officer, was it?
Well, there's a couple of versions of it, and I don't know that how much Abed went into what he had done. You know, that page 14 of the Al-Qaeda training book, you know, says to, you know, all good to bust yourself up and blame it on the Americans and get them investigating it. So, you know, the investigation's still kind of ongoing, but basically, yeah, it was a guard that he was turned over to.
Okay, now, the commanding officer was a General Cleveland. He's in charge of the Special Operations of Central Command. Is that right?
Currently, I don't know that.
Okay, but he was in charge then, and I guess some of the Navy SEALs had an option to go under his non-judicial punishment, but it might have ended their careers. Do you know much about that situation at all?
Oh, yeah. I've been to non-judicial punishment a few times myself, quite a few.
And what does that entail exactly for those of us that don't know?
Well, you know, the standard version of it is, let me put it in, you get in trouble on liberty. Let's say I go out and I get into a bar fight one night and assault charges are brought up. You know, I'm arrested by the shore patrol or the police, and the next morning or something, you know, on your ship or at your command, you're going to be explaining yourself to a few people, and that is going to go up through the chain of command and ultimately to the executive officer. And now he can opt to drop those charges if he wants to, or if he does not, they're going to go to the captain. And that is in the form of non-judicial punishment. And you know, dress uniform, hat in your hand, you'll stand in front of the captain and you will explain the charges. You know, the charges are read to you, and he is going to ask you for your statement. What do you want to say about all this? You tell the story, and then, you know, a lot of different things can come out of that. You know, loss of pay, loss of rank, restriction, extra duty to the brig, different kinds of things like that. Or dismissed. Get out. Don't do it again. So that's basically it. That's non-judicial.
So these SEALs waived that, and they actually requested courts-martial. Is that right?
From what I understand, I don't know the circumstances behind why they did that, but I'm sure there was an air, you know, a smell in the air that this is not going to go very well, and they elected to, you know, be tried by court-martial.
Okay, for all our listeners, we have lines open. If you want to ask Don Shipley a question about the Extreme SEAL experience, about this case with the Navy SEALs, or about just anything involving being a SEAL, feel free to call in right now. Now, as I understand it, there's only one SEAL being charged with the actual harming of this guy. Is that right? The petty officer.
Yeah. Yes.
And the rest are being charged with obstruction type charges, as far as lying or whatever to cover it up. Is that right?
I'm not sure the exact charges on there, but there was some concern that the guys were withholding some things from them. You know, the whole thing's being investigated, and it'll all come out. I don't know the exact charges on all of them.
It just seems to me that the prisoner doesn't even bring this up, and it comes up from someone else, and it gets to this high. This is a mission that these guys probably would have gotten medals for had this not come up. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was a tough one, you know. I don't know. You know, I hate to backseat drive it and to get too deep into it of what's going on over there. But, you know, the country's rightfully upset by it all. It seems, you know, just very, very simple here. But I don't know all the details. I know they did a damn good job, and I don't know who pointed the finger at who. I know it's been investigated a couple of times, and you know, in the end, these guys are they're heroes, and they're going to stay that way. You know, it was nothing, and really, anything that's going to come out of it is still never going to negate what they had done over there, which is just complete heroics. And I think they've, you know, really turned to you know, everyone on their side. And it was, if anything did happen, I'm very sure it did not. I think it's all a bunch of bullshit.
I think it's a bunch of bullshit myself, too. It's, you know, we ask these guys to go in and just do things that a normal citizen just would have no concept of, as far as the bravery involved, and this, just the amount of balls you got to have to go do some of these missions, and then somebody gets a bloody nose or something, and we want to put people up on charges. It's just asinine to me. But let's hope for the best for these guys. It's just an awkward situation. I have a few more questions for you. What are some of your best memories from the SEALs? Some of the things that you can talk about that aren't classified. Some of the best times you've had, or some of the most interesting stories maybe that you like to share with people.
Oh, I'll tell you, the big thing for me, it's just something the reason I joined the Navy in the first place was to see the world. And I did that, you know, all over Asia, you know, as a young guy, and all those different countries, and, you know, but becoming a SEAL, you know, I was back at all those, and back in Northern Europe, and all over the Mediterranean, Middle East, and, you know, it was just being around the people. You know, it doesn't matter, training with all the other different forces and just being in all those countries, you know, there's just something, no matter what country it's in, that you carry a gun for your country and that guy carries a gun for his. And there's kind of a bond that goes on there, just a bit of a mutual respect. And, well, we got along with everybody. And I've just never disliked any country I've ever been to or the guys in it. You know, so fantastic and had a lot of fun. And, you know, especially being in Special Forces, you know, Special Forces in other countries, you know, there's that breed of the not quite right. You know, we're all kind of strange for doing the jobs that we do, and you get to hang out with those guys. And there's some really tough boys that run around this country and that this world carrying a gun for theirs. So,
you know, and they deserve the utmost respect. They really do. I've got a couple of questions about the Extreme Steel Experience. For our listeners, you can go to extremesteelexperience.com. That's Don's website for his business. It's a really cool. It's a really cool thing that he's got there. Tell me about the average guy that comes in there. Is it mostly young guys looking to get an edge up to go to Buds? Is it older guys that have lived life and they want to just come and see what it would have been like, or maybe if they could have made it through? What's the average guy like?
All the guys here are got that type A personality thing going on. They're all in their own rights. Very aggressive types of go-getters. It makes running these courses much easier. I'll tell you, goofy guys click off that website of mine fast. These are guys that half of them are young guys that want to become SEALs or think they want to. And, you know, they find out down here if the shoe fits. And the other half are older guys. You know, they're tired of climbing mountains, and they're looking for some adrenaline and, you know, just some camouflage paint and a couple of cool machine guns, a helicopter, you know, so... Guys keep coming back here. We've had guys go through this course 5 times a year. So we have a lot of fun with them. It's great, the quality of guy that we do get down here. They're, again, in their own rights, you know, they're not lazy. They're top dudes. So.
How old do you have to be to attend the Extreme SEAL Experience?
I've bent the rules a couple of times for a 15-year-old. It was very close. It's typically 16 up. I put a 58-year-old guy through here, and he kicked most of the younger guys' ass. But 16, these guys are a year away from fighting age. You know, they can join at 17. And so we do that. And but there have been a few cases where I've allowed the younger guys, I'm very strict about their maturity level before they come down here. Well, I screen them pretty well on the phone, and you know, we get it done. So.
Do you get fathers and sons coming through together?
We had a Canadian father and son come through here together, and they kicked ass. They were really good together. I don't know. We want these guys, and when they come down here, to be able to express themselves and to have fun. And so I talked to them about it. You know, fathers and sons are coming down here. You know, not to impede your son's training. You know. Let that boy go, or you know. But close father and son teams, great. We almost had a mother and son come through.
I was going to ask you, have any women gone through it?
We're looking at a special course here for them, and there's a television reality show thing that has been being thrown around here a lot, and talking about a all female group is one of the episodes and things like that. No, we don't really have the facilities for a longer type of course for that, but for the 24-hour type of thing, it's happened before, and gets a little tough down here as much as we're doing in the sleeping arrangements. It's tighter than a damn submarine down here.
Do you get many injuries, and how good a shape do you have to be in to go through the Extreme SEAL Experience?
It's hard to put that on the website. You make it sound too hard, a lot of guys don't come. You make it sound too easy, a lot of guys don't come. And what I tell them to do is don't show up here in the driveway with pie smeared all over your face, and you'll be fine. I don't care if a guy can do 10 push-ups or he can do 100. Give me 100%. That's what this course is about. You know, reach deep, and I'm gonna push you to do 20. So that's a far-off thing. What we really want these guys to do is to pass that SEAL physical screening test. Not pass it, just complete it. I don't care how long it takes them to do. Do not get out of that water. And that's the first thing they do down here, 500-meter open water swim, push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, and a mile-and-a-half run. So just finish that thing. And, the younger guys that want to be SEALs, you know, that's a good indicator for where they're ready to go into Buds, man.
Do you get guys that just can't make it through even your watered-down version?
We have had that before, and I will tell you this. I hate seeing failure in any form. I will go out of my way not to do, not to see somebody. You know, nobody wants to come down here and take last place or be a loser or leave out of here feeling defeated, and that is not the purpose of this. But there have been, I think, two occasions where that has happened, where they just absolutely, a lot of guys have done it, and that's where, you know, I stand back and I watch this thing happen and pull them out, put that big arm around that shoulder, pep them up, and throw them back in the arena. And guys finish strong. You know, it's a hard thing to know how far you can be pushed or push yourself, and that's where this goes. You don't have to show up down here with it. You're going to have to in Bud's training in the Navy. But here, guys don't know how far they can go, so it's a you know, crawl, walk, run. But that first day down here, it starts out tough, and, you know, 24 hours later, it ends tough. So it's a build-up for them, but a lot of cool stuff in between. You know, I don't run a push-up school. So, guys come down for a lot more than that, but they definitely get tested down here, and they're the better guys for it.
You mentioned Canadians. Do you get any other people from other countries coming in to take part of the experience?
We had the funniest doggone Russian down here one time. South Africa, Great Britain. We got a cop coming back from Great Britain. And, you know, a lot of guys do that all over the 50 states and you know, across the pond from Europe. Yeah.
Do you get guys that come in that consider themselves, you can tell this guy thinks he's some type of elite operator, and they come in and they're just completely blown away by it?
Yeah, yeah. There's a you know, a certain sense of arrogance sometimes for guys to come down. You know, there's big personalities that we get, and you know, we can humble them down here pretty quick and put that reality check. And you know, I don't know if it's them actually feeling that way or guys do that just to, you know, that's their way of coping, you know, with kind of the stress. You know, it's pretty intimidating when the guys come down here and get on that bus and pull up to this cabin. It's very quiet back there when we get them in, you know, because they don't know what's going to happen. And so some guys' way of coping is to, you know, push that chest out a little bit. But typically, no, not a lot of arrogance or anything like that. I just think it's a coping mechanism for some guys, and they lose that kind of quick. So, you know, it works out pretty damn good.
I wish we had more time. We got to wrap it up here in a couple of minutes, but I do have a few more questions for you. What are the differences that you know between Bud's when you went through it back in, what was it, the early 80s, compared to what Bud's is now? Is it less strict? Is it more strict? Were they able to put their hands on you back then and call you an asshole to your face? Or, and what's the differences between then and now?
I'll tell you, it's a lot harder out there now. I hate to admit it. You know, none of the older guys do. You know, our Bud's class was the last hard Bud's class out there. But they get they're in a different era right now than we were. You know, these current wars, the instructors out there are you know, where my instructors were Vietnam vets, these guys are Afghanistan, Iraq, and more guys are going into that training now than, you know, hell, my Bud's class started with 120 and 24 of us finished it. They've had classes up there over 300 and are getting about the same numbers. There's a lot of guys that go out there for the wrong reasons because they see these movies, they see the videos, they, you know, hear the story, the lone survivor things. They really want to be in there. They think they want to be in there. So it gets ugly out there with those first classes, and it's just kind of a bloodletting. You know, they weed them out really, really quick. And, so it's a lot more technical base now, a little bit more, you know, than some of the rudimentary things we went through. Hell, I went through most of my SEAL career without you know, much in the way of night vision or optics on our weapons. You know, it was all open sights, you know, and all that stuff. And now these guys are just some of the gear and some of the things they do. So Bud's just smartened up in that way, you know, pushing the guys toward the more current environment and atmospheres, and the standards will never drop. You know, what's cool is, you know, all our admirals, you know, I don't care how senior you get, you know, you all went through Bud's, and we know what kind of guy comes out of that. So the more they change some stuff, you know, they certainly get away from certain evolutions, certain things, but they just find something else to do. It'll never change in that respect. So.
Hey, Don, I really appreciate you spending this time with us tonight. You answered a lot of questions that I had, went through a lot of stuff that I think a lot of people didn't know about the Navy SEALs. All our listeners, please check out Don's website at Extreme SEAL Experience. Once again, thanks, Don.
Yeah, sorry about being a little bit vague there, bro, with this current thing, but, you know, America's got a right to be outraged over it, and I think the guys are going to come out of this thing just fine. So,
once it gets resolved and wrapped up, I'd like to have you back on maybe for a little shorter segment just to talk about it.
Yeah, we'll get that mess cleaned up. It's been pushed back to May for their court martials here, and we're going to see. You know, it's a good job for you, man. I appreciate you having me on, and thanks a lot.
Thanks for being on, Don. That was Don Shipley, former U.S. Navy SEAL. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, that's that. This was the first episode of Radio Free ARFCOM. Didn't go as smoothly as we wanted, but it went, and we got it done. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Next week, we have, let me make sure, we have Bobby. He's known as Great White on the website. He's the founder of Randstad's Militia. We also have Nick Randstad himself. He's the sniper, for those of you that don't know, that holds the U.S. Army record for the longest confirmed kill ever. His screen name on the AR-15.com is Snake Eater M24. We'll have both of those guys on next week. It should be a great show. We'll also have Joe DeBergales on for his segment. Old Painless will have his box of truth. Hopefully I can talk a few more of you people, you ARFCOMers that I've contacted into doing their segments. We'll have another two-way range. Hopefully we can get a livelier debate than we did this time. Don't forget to go to AR-15.com. In the GD section, vote for the winner of the two-way range segment if you got that. I will post up the podcast as soon as I can. And that's it. I'd like to say God bless America on the way out of here. Piccolo says, the arrow will not pass. The arrow will not pass. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great week and talk to you next week.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.